This is the Best of Game Time podcast. Highlights of today's 1620 The Zone's Game Time in bite-sized pieces. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading the Best Up Podcast. On today's episode, give you my take on the latest with the status of Chris Jones and whether he's going to play. Also, the big news, Trev Alberts, no longer a candidate for the Nebraska Athletic Director position. My take on that. Plus, my Big Five, top five teams of the Big Ten Conference, and a great conversation with Scott Chandley. Enjoy the podcast. I want to start with Chris Jones today. And it's funny how yesterday, for a variety of reasons, you know, I spent about 5 minutes laying out all the reasons I didn't think Chris Jones was going to play. And I felt like that, I felt pretty good about that, obviously. But then after reading some Bob Diaco quotes about Chris Jones after practice yesterday, I don't know. Here's Diaco said that he's trying not to get overly excited because he doesn't want to put undue pressure on Chris Jones, this via Brian Christofferson. But Diaco said he looks really good. When asked, can he play this week? Diaco said, quote, it's really entirely up to him. I think the whole team is just letting him drive his timing and tempo. So you read that quote, and there is one line in that quote that really stands out to me. And it's the quote of, it's entirely up to him. If this decision is truthfully all on Chris Jones on whether he wants to play or not, then Chris Jones is gonna play. Here's one of my water is wet lines that you hear all the time from people. Players play, right? That's like play is play. That's what they wanted. You put it on a player, say, hey man, you want to play? They almost always choose to play, except if you're Derrick Rose a few years back in the playoffs and he was cleared to play and chose not to play. I'm sorry, that's a tangent. I'm sorry. I won't go over there. But with Chris Jones, players want to play. And beyond all the other stuff, I think if this is up to Chris Jones, if he makes the final call on whether he's going to put his jersey and his shoulder pads and his helmet on Saturday night, I think if it's up to him, oh, he's going to play. You're telling me? I mean, shoot. We got dudes, people in the crowd are 47, got a beer gut, and they're like, man, if I could put on a helmet, I'd go play, right? Like, this is one of those weeks that if you got any competitive bone in your body, oh, you want to strap it up and rock. So you're telling me Chris Jones is going to practice all week, and then he's going to go to the stadium and be in the locker room. They're going to have the music bumping. He's going to step onto the field. And you're going to tell me he's going to see that sea of red. He's going to see the Badgers on the other side of the field. You're going to tell me he's going to be like, I don't want to play. But Derrick Rose did that. He saw Dwayne Wade and LeBron. I'm sorry. We'll stop doing that. So for me, I read that quote from Diaco. It's entirely up to him. If that is in fact true, Chris Jones is going to play. Now, the interesting thing now becomes, what will that rotation at corner look like? You know, how much can, in the statement of Chris Jones will play, how much will he play? Like, is Chris Jones totally up to speed and locked in on assignments and calls and all that stuff? One of the things that I'm curious about, and I think we'll find out this Saturday, has Chris Jones been messing around and monkeying around at practice and not been paying attention this month, or has he stayed locked in and preparing for this moment throughout this entire rehab process? Because I'm telling you, it is really, really easy when you're not playing to just mentally check out. It's easy to just kind of sit off on the sidelines and not stay locked in, or when they're going over film, not stay locked. When you're not playing, it's easy to mentally check out. But if he has all the calls and assignments and different things, I have to imagine they've installed and altered since the spring. Like, if he's been staying locked in and he has all that stuff, then, man, that's a testament to Chris Jones's mental maturity, that he's done a good job of being locked in even while he's been rehabbing. Because think about it. The last time the guy was playing was in the spring when they were just installing the basics. You know, I mean, we're 5 games into this thing. And you're adding little wrinkles and subtleties and nuances and this and that, like, each week. So, from the outside looking in, and this is what I was talking about yesterday, it appears to be a tall task to have Chris Jones play. I mean, guy has knee surgery. He's going through the rehab process. He just gets cleared to practice. And then he's going to practice 4 times and then go play against a top 10 team. Like, that's like, when you frame it that way, you go, phew, that's a lot to ask. But that may be what happens, because again, it all goes back to that one line from Bob Diaco. It's entirely up to him. Well, again, you leave it up to a player on whether or not he wants to play or not, wants to compete or not, wants to get out there with his brothers and lay it on the line or not. 99% of the time, a player is going to play. Especially on Saturday night. Like, I could see if this was, you know, I mean, roast beef steak coming to town and him being like, yeah, you know, I mean, my knee's still feeling a little, yeah. I still think 99% of the time players want to play. But, I mean, this is Saturday night. This is why you do it, man. Right? I mean, this is why you play. This is what you lay in bed and dream about as a player. This is why you wake up in the summers and condition at 6 a.m. This is why you put in that extra work. This is literally a game that you dream of playing about. Like, so if it's on him, he's going to play. Now, hopefully Jones is doing what's best for the team and not being set. Like, if he's not ready, if he's not ready to help the team, hopefully he has the maturity to see that. If he's not ready to go, if he's like, oh, I don't know all the checks here. Oh my God, you know, I can't turn and I can't really open up my hips when then he shouldn't play. So, I mean, and the coaching staff needs to be able to make the right decision on just because Jones is cleared and wants to play doesn't mean he's ready to play either. You right? I mean, sometimes you have to tell a player no. So my guess is, my read is that you'll see Jones sporadically. Now, I just struggle to think that dude is ready to play corner for 50, 60 snaps. I struggle to see that. A few plays here and there, I think that's what you'll see. And you know what? Maybe Chris Jones' presence will infuse some energy and also infuse some focus from Eric Lee and Lamar Jackson. I mean, those two guys haven't been great, if we're being honest. And maybe Chris Jones being back in the mix will force those guys to get locked back in, man, because subconsciously they've known that there really isn't anybody there that's going to replace them right now with Jones on the shelf. So sometimes it's weird. When you know you don't have anybody, you know, nipping at your heels to replace you, sometimes that can allow you to breathe and relax as a player because you're not looking over your shoulder all the time, and sometimes that's good. But sometimes that can make players relax in a bad way and be like, ah, you know, I mean, no one's taking my job. Relax. When there's no real threat of losing your job, sometimes it can be human nature to relax. So maybe Chris Jones being back at practice will force those guys to lock back in. Yeah, we'll see. But again, for me, I felt like from the outside looking in, for a lot of the obvious reasons, it felt like it was going to be a tall task to see Chris Jones play on Saturday. But, you know, the more you read quotes, the more you read between the lines of things. And if this is truthfully going to be Chris Jones' decision, then I think homeboy's going to play. We'll see. Take one phone call, then I'll set up the show. What's up, Trevor? Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going there?
What's up?
I don't think that Diaco meant that the decision's up to him, like you're saying. Like, I think what he meant when he said it's up to him, I think he meant it's up to how he practices. week? Is he going to show that he can make all the calls, all the checks? Is he going to read the defense or the offenses properly? You know, I think that's really what he meant when he said it's up to him. I mean, if the coaches don't trust or believe in him, you know, Saturday afternoon, and he comes in and says, no, I'm good to go, they're not going to put him in. I really do think that what he meant by that is it's how he practices this week. That's what they meant by it's up to him. Not just, yeah, I'm good to go, coach. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, Bob Diaco, appreciate the phone call. Bob Diaco said that he's looked great. I mean, it was like he said he looked great, and then he said, I mean, the quote to me, well, I mean, obviously, like, to me, that's like the obvious, everything matters how you practice, right? I mean, it's like, that goes for everybody. Can't go out there and be a bonehead for 5 days and then think you're going to play. But, I mean, Diaco said he's trying not to get overly excited because he doesn't want to put undue pressure on Chris Jones, but he looks really good. Can he play this week? Diaco's answer was, it's entirely up to him. I think the whole team is just letting him drive his timing and tempo. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, of course, for it goes for every player. Every player's got to go practice. I mean, you got to look okay in practice. But I think as long as he's medically cleared and he looks okay in practice, and the coaches say, "How's it feel?" and he says it feels good. That's where it's on him. How does it feel? Because ultimately, he's the only one that can answer that question. Because there hits a point where, from a medical standpoint, swelling's gone, all the different tests, he's cleared. Now it's on Chris Jones and being able to answer the question, hey, you feel good? You want to play? Can you play? And only he can answer that question. So again, the big news of the day, Trev Alberts is not a candidate for the Nebraska athletic director position that obviously is vacant after the firing of Sean Eichhorst. Trev Alberts sent an email to numerous members of the staff of this UNO staff this morning. And this all according to the Omaha World Herald on omaha.com. I retweeted the story. You can go check it out yourself. But he has told the search firm involved with obviously the Husker athletic director search that he will not compete for the job after, quote, some prayerful consideration. Said he has unfinished business and that he remains committed to working as hard as possible to realize those goals at UNO. He said, quote, in the email that there's been, quote, much speculation and conjecture about my interest in candidacy from local media and others. He said he was contacted by the search firm to interview for the job, but that he has not pursued or interviewed for any job in his 8 years at UNO, and he said he doesn't plan to change that at this time. He says, I continue to be honored to serve alongside our amazing team. And so there you have it. So Trev Alberts is not a candidate for the athletic director position. And I think there are a lot of people that aren't too terribly upset by that. You know, first of all, hiring a search firm and then going 50 miles down the road and hiring Trev Alberts seems like a waste of money for the search firm. So, you know, as Kugler pointed out last week, by you know, Chancellor Ronnie Green and Hank Bounds announcing that they were going to hire a search firm and all that stuff, that made things a little bit interesting on you know, how much of a viable candidate Trev actually was. But same token, sounds like the search firm did at least reach out to him, but I'd imagine they've cast a pretty large net in terms of all the potential candidates that they want to talk to. I don't think this is a horrible thing. I really don't. And this is coming from a guy that likes Trev. I've always liked Trev. I do know that obviously him cutting the wrestling and football program didn't sit well with a lot of people. I get how it was handled wasn't great, but sometimes there's no great way for those things to come to an end. And ultimately, to when you're in charge of an athletic department and you're running an organization like that, you got to make tough decisions. And that means, you're not going to make friends with everybody. So he had to make a tough decision, had to cut football, had to cut wrestling. Make kind of hockey their bell cow sport in their transition into Division I, and they're doing that. But yeah, it's one of those things. Like, here's one of the things that a lot of people have said, which I agree is an interesting way to look at it, but I also think it's not entirely the best way to look at it. There's been a lot of people saying, if Trev Alberts wasn't a former Husker, would there be anything about his resume that would suggest that he would be the right hire as the athletic director for Nebraska? And the answer to that question is no. Maybe the fact that he's been in this area. So, I mean, I'd imagine he knows all of the big, he knows all the big boosters, all the people that quote unquote matter in terms of the big decision makers around this area. That helps. But the fact remains, you know, the guy's never made a football hire. He's never overseen a football program for an extended period of time at this. So, I think when you look at it from that standpoint, yeah, I can understand saying, hey, if he wasn't Trev Alberts, the former Husker, would he even be under consideration? Yeah, probably not. But I also think that is turning a blind eye to the importance of fit and the importance of understanding the place that you're going to go work out. And I think Trev would have been a decent fit, and I think Trev would have understood the landscape of the state of Nebraska, the fans, and obviously football. You know, because that's something that some people have said about Scott Frost at times. Like, oh, if Scott Frost wasn't the former Husker quarterback, would he even be under consideration? Like, well, now I think now, yeah. I think he is slowly, steadily becoming that hot up-and-coming coordinator or up-and-coming coach. But again, I think it also, like, where you played does kind of matter. But this isn't too terribly surprising to me, to be honest with you. This wasn't too surprising. I think I think that Hank Bounds and Ronnie Green, when they say they were totally committed to searching far and wide for the best possible candidate to be the athletic director, I think they meant it. I think they did. And I think I would imagine that there are a lot of people that actually feel okay about it today. I think there's a lot of people that didn't want to see Trev be hired as the next AD. I think there's a lot of people that felt like that. Like I said, every interaction I've ever had with Trev Alberts has been a positive one. So there you go. So again, Trev Alberts tells his staff he will not be a candidate for the Nebraska athletic director position. So the search rages on. Let's bring him in. Super Bowl champ, former black shirt, lots to talk about. Scott, how are you?
Hey, doing good.
Well, I mean, just a massive game coming up on Saturday night under the lights, Memorial Stadium, Nebraska, Wisconsin. Scott, are you more concerned about Nebraska mentally in this game or Nebraska physically in this game?
Well, I would say, you know, that's a tough one because mentally it's been tough, especially on a national stage against a good team. It's been here and there, Nebraska's played well. You look at Michigan State a couple years ago and upsetting them at home. They played well at home under the lights. But I think, for me, with this matchup against Wisconsin, I think this team will be ready. The stadium's going to be rocking. I'm worried physically the matchups in the trenches. That concerns me is along the line against this Wisconsin team.
Table that, because we're going to get to that in a second. How important, to look back on Friday real quick, Tanner Lee had a much better game, 17-24, and with that, there were four drops. He throws three touchdowns, no picks. How important do you think it was for Lee and the people around Lee for him to have a good game in terms of confidence externally and internally?
Oh, very important, especially when you look at the previous couple games. It was rocky, turning the ball over. It's tough to win games against anybody when you turn the ball over. And I think, you know, I know it was Illinois, and it's hard to evaluate, put too much into the game, but I thought it was as clean of a game as I've seen Nebraska play in a long time. You talked about giving up two field goals on the road. And the thing that impressed me the most about that win is, besides the drops, Nebraska didn't do anything to beat themselves. They didn't make a drastic turnover or make a stupid mistake penalty-wise to allow Illinois any room to breathe. And I felt like it was a clean game from start to the finish, so that was encouraging.
So we've three straight games now. You think about what the defense looked like after the Oregon game compared to now after the Illinois game. The Nebraska defense has looked good for three straight games. Now, all three offenses have been ranked in the hundreds, but still, they've looked good. What have you learned in the past three games about this defense, Scott?
Well, for me, it's schematically, at some point, they said, you know what, if we're not going to be a good defense, we're not going to be passive. It's just going to be because somebody makes plays on us. And schematically, what Coach Diaco has done has been great. I know as a defensive player, you love to bring pressure. You want, as a linebacker, you love to run all those loop blitzes and stunts that they've been running. And, you know, they'll line up with where it looks like it's going to be three guys coming, and then you end up with five or six guys coming. And so I think he's done a great job as far as the scheme goes, from changing it up front and getting guys free and confusing offensive lines. And I think that's what you need to do. And you kind of pick your poison with that, because you leave the guys in the back end one-on-one and isolate a little bit.
Yeah.
But you got to get pressure on the quarterback in football.
Scott Shanley's my guest. Stylistically, this feels like Wisconsin is a good matchup for Nebraska in terms of taking on their offense. I mean, Wisconsin, a lot of two tight ends, I formation, huddle up, run it right at you. Good matchup, right, Scott?
Well, we're going to find out, because, you know, I think Nebraska, you played Oregon, and it's throw the ball over the field and speed, and the last 2 weeks has kind of settled down a little bit. I think, you know, for the most part, you like that matchup because it gets you in a game where it's maybe a 21-20 game or a 17-20 Big Ten type game, and you don't have to worry about guys getting exploited out on the perimeter as much. But if the guys come in with the mentality of we're ready to smack somebody in the mouth every single play, they can definitely beat Wisconsin, but they have to be able to do it for four quarters.
What's important, and we talked about this a little bit last year, I remember, but what's important defensively when you're dealing with great play-action pass teams?
Well, number one thing is you have to have great eyes. If your key is the tight end, you need to key the tight end. If your key is the running back, you need to key the running back. If you're supposed to, as a safety, if you're supposed to be locked on to the slot receiver, you have to be disciplined with your eyes. Otherwise, these play-action teams will start tearing you apart. But to me, besides the eyes, by far the most important thing is stopping the run. If you don't stop the run, you're going to be in for a long day when it comes to play-action right. pass teams. If you're stopping the run, you make it easy on yourself when it's 3rd and 10.
So, you know, Wisconsin, you know, they got a great tight end in Troy Fumagalli. Now he's dealing with a little hamstring. He didn't play last game. His status still up in the air. But let's assume he's going to play, and he's a really big part of their offense. Within the 3-4, talk me through defending a tight end and who that maybe puts pressure on.
Well, I think playing a 3-4 defense actually helps defend tight ends, because you have a stand-up linebacker standing on his outside shoulder. And, you know, what we always did in the 3-4, if we had a good tight end, was before the outside linebacker rushed or dropped, he would chip that tight end, bang him a little bit, slow him down in his route, and then it allows the inside linebackers to get into their zone drop and relate to him a little bit better. So I think a 3-4 schematically is a good defense to take away a tight end, just because you can bang them around a little bit with your outside linebacker.
Scott Shanley's my guest, former black shirt Super Bowl champ. One of the things you see Nebraska do, but also Wisconsin does, Scott, is a lot of window dressing with pre-snap shifts and motions. Help us out for guys that didn't play. What are coaches trying to do there, and what's important defensively to handle some of the pre-snap motions and shifts to make sure you're lined up correctly?
Well, the reason teams do that is because all they're trying to do is to get one guy on defense to panic and to not read his correct key based on the shift. And they shift right at the last second so that guys can't process what their responsibilities are. And they're just hoping one guy is not in his gap. One guy doesn't contain the ball if he's supposed to contain the ball. And so offenses are just trying to create a little bit of confusion right before the snap of the ball. But if you have a disciplined defense who can calm their heartbeat down and, right. and just say, okay, they're shifting, this is the final formation, no big deal, and relax. The shifting is all just window dressing to me.
Is it harder, though, at home, because the crowd's going to be loud, to talk some of that stuff through?
Yeah, that's a great point. At home, oddly enough, it does make it tough against teams like that, because if you have a defense, you have a middle linebacker that has to relay a lot of calls, you're changing the front strength, slide left, slide right, we're pinching one of the defensive linemen to go the A-gap. Those types of things, I can remember playing home games where we just had to throw those checks out, and we had to simplify it on defense based on the crowd noise.
Okay, given the matchup, and then we'll go to the other side of the ball. Given the matchup, give me the most important defensive player. Is it a Stoltenberg on the interior? Is it Weber? Is it Gifford? Is it Kalu, who might play back at safety? Like, who do you think needs to play well defensively?
Well, I'm going to go with the position group. It's got to be the three down linemen. Those guys are the key to the 3-4 defense, especially against, we just talked about, a two-back running team or one-back power zone running team. They can't get reach blocked when they run those zone plays to the outside, because that opens gaps. And life becomes really difficult on the inside linebackers and safeties if those three down linemen don't get their job done at the snap of the ball.
By the way, not sure if you ever dealt with a knee issue, but obviously Chris Jones had a meniscus and had surgery in the summer. He's just been cleared to practice this week, Scott. And there's a little uncertainty. I think you read between the lines. You almost get the sense he's going to play. Is it feasible, Scott, in your opinion, that a guy can have meniscus surgery in the summer and be cleared to practice and then within 1 week go play against a top 10 team?
Well, I know this. All guys heal differently. Some guys are freaks of nature and they can heal fast. But the one thing the tough thing with competitive guys is making sure that they don't feel guilty that they're not out there and making sure that they're doing the best thing for themselves as far as making sure they're healthy, especially in a game like this. Now, if he's feeling pretty good and they regulate his snaps and say, hey, you're just going to play when we go four cornerbacks, or you're going to play 10 to 20 plays based on what they're lining up, I have no problem with that. But to make him come back and think he's going to play a full game would be very tough.
So let's say he plays sporadically, a few snaps here and there, Scott. What do you think he'll struggle with the most? Is it getting out of his breaks? Is it tackling? Is it, you know, like, is it conditioning? What do you think he'll struggle with the most?
Well, definitely change of direction at that speed is different in the game than it is in practice. But besides the change of direction, planting and breaking, it's the tackling. I mean, there's just nothing you can do to prepare for that. Taking on a guy who's bringing force, or maybe your defensive guys are pushing you at an awkward angle, that's always the toughest thing is bracing for those tackles.
All right, other side of the ball, Scott. Scott Shanley, Nebraska's offense. I feel like stylistically, it's a really bad matchup for Nebraska's offense. Wisconsin, great against the run. They're second in the Big Ten in sacks. They lead the Big Ten in interceptions. Let's talk about protecting Lee, because that's the thing that gives me kind of a shiver up my spine is thinking about Wisconsin, third and long. They're pinning their ears back and they're coming after Lee. And we've seen he's had a tendency to show some bad decisions and Nebraska's had a tough time protecting him. What are some things you can do to kind of help protect Lee on Saturday night?
Well, you got to win on first down, whether that's running the ball or throwing screens, throwing quick, easy passes to the tight ends. Running bunch routes, you have to win on first down. You can't get into second and 10 and let those guys pin their ears back, because now you put all the pressure on the O-line, you put all the pressure on the quarterback in those long yard situations. So to me, it's going to be how effectively do you run the ball to take the pressure off the quarterback so you can play action. But the main key is to win on first down and get into manageable yards on second and third.
How confident are you that Nebraska can win first down and run the football effectively?
I think they can. I think they're starting to run the ball a lot better. You don't see a whole lot of negative plays. And I think if they can stay out of negative plays, runs for -3 and getting in those long yard situations, I think they can. This offense line is going to have to assert their will early on. Know it's going to be a four-quarter game. And if they can't, that's where offensively you start running some screens, or you start running some easy concept routes to get the quarterback comfortable against a good team.
Well, hey, what have you seen with Ozigbo? You like how Divino Zigbo's run?
He's running great. Running great. Like I said, I think what I just mentioned about not having negative plays, he's a big reason for that.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets what he can get, and that's worth a lot.
Hey, what's it like, Scott? It's one thing when you go into a game against, like, an Oregon, and you know it's probably going to be a shootout, right? So, like, I don't want to say you're like, you have a mistake and it's no big deal, but a mistake in a 42-35 game is a lot different than a mistake in a 13-7 game, which I think Saturday has a chance to be more of a low-scoring game. What's it like going into a game knowing that, like, Scott, one mistake could be the difference?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on that. And there's, like you said, there's games that take on life of their own. And sometimes when you get in a shootout, you put the more expectations on the offense to perform, to keep up with the other offense. But when you get in those low-scoring battles, defensively, every play matters, and every play you have to tell yourself mentally, no matter how tired you are, how banged up you are, that could be the play that changes the course of the game, especially if the offenses are struggling. So I think that you're right. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, and, you know, the one phase of the game we haven't even talked about is special teams. I think special teams can play a huge part in this game.
No doubt. Scott, do you remember, like, having to, on big game weeks, having to, like, manage your emotions throughout the week? I mean, because it's a long, we're still a long ways away from Saturday at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, it's tough. It is tough. They're not going to have any problem getting up
when
they walk out in front of the crowd under the lights against Wisconsin. So the one thing as a player that's always hard is to realize it's still football. As crazy as the atmosphere is, you still have to key your guy. You still have to play your responsibilities. You still have to do your job, because emotion isn't going to help you if you're not doing your job. And I think that's the one thing that's always hard to regulate with young kids.
The biggest factor that decides this football game will be what?
Turnovers. Nebraska is not dominant enough or good enough talent-wise to overcome turnovers against many teams. We saw it against Northern Illinois, or Nebraska, you like to think they have better talent. Yeah, they couldn't overcome it. So if Nebraska protects the football, they'll have a chance. But if they turn the ball over, it could be a long night.
All right, I asked some people this question yesterday. If you could sprinkle magic pixie dust on one Nebraska player not named Tanner Lee to play great on Saturday night, who would it be?
Stanley Morgan.
Mm.
I mean, I think he has the ability to create mismatches. And when I look at this Nebraska team, there's not a whole lot of guys where I'd look at and say, they're a problem for the other team. I think he can be that guy. He was very inconsistent, coming off the injury, dropped a lot of balls. But he has that ability to give Wisconsin fits in right. One-on-one matchups.
Scott Shanley, black shirt, Super Bowl champ. Scott, it's great stuff. Wish we could go like 20 more minutes, but we're up against the clock. Great stuff, my man. We'll catch up next Wednesday, recap the game.
Yep, sounds great. Take care.
So in just thinking out loud with this thing, with Trev saying he isn't a candidate for the Nebraska job, he decided he didn't want to pursue it. He said he was contacted by the search firm. I wonder. And as Trev said in the statement, that there's been a lot of speculation and conjecture about my interest in candidacy from local media and others. Well, I guess I'll just play right into that as I speculate and have some conjecture here. I wonder. And just thinking out loud with this little thing. So he said he was contacted by the search firm. So he was at least on Nebraska's radar on their end. So then do I find it hard to believe that Trev Alberts had no interest in the athletic director position at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln? I find that really hard to believe. I mean, it's where he went to school. It's where he forged his identity as a football player. And it's more money. I wonder this. I wonder if Trev Alberts was contacted by this search firm and Trev wanted some assurance on some level that if he pursued the job, that he would have a pretty darn good job or a pretty darn good chance of getting the job. Because it would be a tough deal for Trev Alberts to pursue this gig, not get it, and for that to then leak out. I think there's a chance, just speculating from the outside looking in, did Trev potentially survey the situation and in maybe a conversation with the search firm, maybe he was able to get a feel for the lay of the land and learn that this is going to be a tall task for me to get this job. So rather than pursue it and potentially not get it and have to come back to with kind of your tail tucked between your legs, for lack of a better term, I think he thought, it may be the smarter move to just not pursue it, remove his name, and stay at UNO while he is still relatively well-liked. I mean, again, he's a guy that always has to battle that likability factor amongst people in Omaha and UNO fans. Pursuing the Nebraska job and the Nebraska AD job and not getting it, I don't know how that would land for some people in Omaha, some UNO Maverick fans. So I wonder how much that was at play here. Because again, part of me feels, and here's the thing. There are some people might look at Mark Few and go, for the love of God, why would you want to stay at Gonzaga when you're getting courted by a bunch of these, top five, top 10 jobs? And he might just be, hey man, I'm happy here. I like what I got going here. I'm committed here. I'm not saying that that's not possible. It's totally possible. I mean, there's some people Greg McDermott was offered the Ohio State job. A lot of people think the Ohio State job's a better basketball job. It was going to be a raise, and he said, nah, I'm good. So it is entirely possible that Trev saying, I like what we got going at UNO. I like what I got going here. I'm happy. I'm going to stay here. I'm not interested. It's possible. But I think the fact that there was the search firm reached out, is there a chance that Trev maybe surveyed the situation? Said, I don't know if I'm going to get it. And he said, rather than go through this process, and then maybe on the other end, I don't get it. That's gonna be a little bit messy for people that now you have to go back and lead in your athletic department. You have to then go to, I mean, listen, when Trev Alberts is asking for donations from other boosters within this market, who do you think they're competing for donations against? Nebraska and Creighton. And you got to be able to sell why you should donate to UNO and not there. It could be hard. So, and just trying to think out loud of, you know, hey, what's going on? What was really going on there? I wonder if there was a little bit of that going on as well. That's just me. Chuck says, spot on. He likely either was told directly or got the impression the interview was more of a for show than anything. That's my read. My read is throughout that, whatever conversations, and trust me, I mean, Trev, so not like there weren't some conversations probably had behind the scenes. I think Trev surveyed the situation and thought, how likely is it that I ultimately end up with this job? And if the answer isn't really likely, then I think it's better for me to just not even pursue it and to preemptively say, hey, I'm withdrawn. I'm withdrawn. So the idea that, you know, I mean, I think there's no question there's probably been some behind the scenes stuff and conversations and trying to figure out from Trev and his people, maybe his agent, and trying to figure out exactly what the situation is. Who's the front runner? What are they thinking? Who are the candidates? Am I the front runner? Oh, I'm not. Okay. Well, and you're able to gather somewhat of a feel for where you kind of fall in the search firm's list and Nebraska's list and how much they want you. And I think there's no doubt that I think it's the right move. I think if Trev felt like he wasn't going to get the job, you're better off probably just saying, no. Jay tweets at me and says, you are likely correct. I have done many searches. He likely inquired, and this saves face on both ends. Search can be a ruse. That was my read on it the moment it broke this morning. I think it's one of those things that Trev ends up saving some face, right? Nebraska saves some face because Nebraska, hey man, we reached out to him. Like Chancellor Ronnie Green and Hank Bounds can say, hey man, we reached out to him. We reached out to him, and he said he's the one that withdrew his name. So it saves face on Nebraska's side. I think it saves face for Trev and saying, yeah, I've decided I want to stay. That is probably my read on it. I think the way it played out this morning, I think Nebraska looks good, but I think it's not one of those things people are going to be upset with Nebraska. I don't think people can get totally upset with Trev. And let's be honest, I don't know how much he was, I think from the outside looking in, he was the front runner, right? I mean, I think you've seen some national people like Stuart Mandel tweet today, well, so much for the supposed front runner for the job. I don't know how much. He was the first name that came to mind, but I don't know how much the fan base really wanted to see Trev get the gig. So I think every way, shape, and form, I think it just kind of like today was the least messy outcome for a lot of different people. So that's kind of how I see it. It is Wednesday, and it is football season, and you know what that means. It is time for my top five teams in the Big Ten Conference. It's time for my Big Five.
Knicks.
The big guy can travel. It's touchdown. Wes Thompson.
Big.
It's going to be tipped and caught. It's caught. It's caught in the touchdown, Western Towns.
Five.
Down the sideline. Racing into the end zone.
Are you kidding me? No flags. Oh, my God.
God, I love that open. Let's do it.
number five.
Going to go with Michigan State. You know, this fifth spot has been a revolving door. And we're only a month into the season. I think it speaks to the gap between the top four teams. And there's just a jumbled group of four or five teams that are all similar. I'm going to go with Michigan State. They're a tough team to get a handle on, but what they did defensively to Iowa in the trenches last week garners some respect. Michigan State took down Iowa 17-10 and held Iowa to, wait for it, 19 yards rushing. You hold Iowa to 19 yards on the ground, that's impressive. I felt like all year the Spartans' defense was sneaky good, and they showed it on Saturday. I mean, hell, Michigan State didn't allow an offensive touchdown in the first two games. But the offense got off to a fast start against Iowa, got up 14-0. That was enough to hold on and win. And it's the final score of the Michigan State game against Notre Dame is slightly misleading. Michigan State actually outgained the Irish 2 weeks ago, but it was three first-half turnovers that totally changed the game. But Notre Dame lit them up. But again, it felt like turnovers impacted the complexion of that, so you don't want to overreact necessarily to thinking that they're not a good team, because they got a real defense. Michigan State has a real defense. Offensively, jury is still out. We'll find out even more this weekend when Michigan State goes to Michigan. But for now, I got the Spartans at number five.
Number four.
Michigan. It was a bye week for the Wolverines, but it's the same story with Michigan. Defense is downright scary good. Offense is still a grind. Now, Michigan will start John O'Korn at quarterback, who filled in for the injured Wilton Spade against Purdue and played okay. We'll see what O'Korn can do with ample time to prep physically, mentally, having a bye week, all that stuff. Either way, that defense for Michigan is nasty. They lead the Big Ten in total yards allowed, rush defense, pass defense. They lead the Big Ten in sacks. I mean, Purdue didn't complete a single third down 2 weeks ago. This defense is big-time good. And if Michigan can get anything rolling consistently on offense, look out. Easier said than done, though, based on especially on how it's looked. Big game this weekend for Michigan at home with the Spartans. I got Michigan at number four.
Number three.
Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin, they had a rough first half against Northwestern. But once again, they flexed their muscles in the second half to beat Northwestern 33-24. Wisconsin and their style, it has a cumulative effect on you. They wear you down on both sides of the ball, and ultimately, by the time you think you're hanging in there, and then, you know, third, fourth quarter comes, and it's a little different deal. Wisconsin held Northwestern to 25 yards rushing, and Wisconsin sacked Clayton Thorson eight times. They're second in the Big Ten in sacks, and they lead the Big Ten in interceptions. That defense is really, really disruptive. They shut down the run. They put you in third and longs. They pin their ears back, and they go quarterback hunting. And oftentimes that means the quarterback's going to make some errant throws, and they're really good at going and getting the rock. On the other side, they do what they do. Their run game has been good, averaging 233 yards per game, good for second in the Big Ten. Hornibrook's an interesting guy. Although some of Hornibrook's passing stats look good, I mean, he leads the Big Ten in pass efficiency. He's completing 66% of his passes. He's got nine touchdowns, three picks. I still think he's probably the big question on their team. I thought he'd take a bigger step from last year, and he looks largely the same, and at times even looks like he's regressed. But again, they don't ask him to do a whole lot, you know? Manage the game, make a few play-action throws, don't turn it over, let the defensive rushing attack win the game. And for the most part, he does that. Still a veteran team that knows exactly who they are, and they're really good in the trenches, and they're really well coached. Big game under the lights, Memorial Stadium Saturday night. I got Wisconsin at number three.
Number two.
Ohio State. So the big question with the Buckeyes is, can they find a passing attack, a downfield passing attack? Everyone was questioning and doubting JT Barrett after that Oklahoma loss. Well, since that loss, Ohio State has passed for 300 yards in three straight games. Now, I get that the competition hasn't been great, but still, it's good to see. It's kind of like Nebraska's defense. Everyone was questioning the defense after the Oregon game, and then for three straight games, defense looked good. It's good to see. But the completion, the competition's been subpar for both, you know, both the Nebraska situation and the Ohio State situation. But JT Barrett gaining a little bit more confidence. They're just crushing the opposition right now. And Ohio State crushed Rutgers 56-0. I say it every week. I'm not throwing dirt at Ohio State. I see the parallels to the 2014 team that lost early. Everyone wrote them off. Everyone questioned Barrett. They quietly kept on winning and improving, and they were right there at the end of the year. Tough deal for Maryland this week, who's got to go to Ohio State with their third-string quarterback and deal with that front seven defensively for Ohio State. Yikes. I got the Buckeyes at number two.
Number one.
Penn State. They crushed a decent Indiana squad, 45-14. I mean, Indiana's not a bad team. And Saquon Barkley showed you why he's the Heisman frontrunner, in my opinion, because he can beat you in more ways than one. Barkley was actually held in check on the ground, 20 carries for 56 yards. But he returned a kickoff for a touchdown. He had 51 yards receiving on four catches, and he threw for one touchdown as well. So he put his fingerprints all over the game, in spite of being held in check from just tailback run game. Little concerning that Penn State couldn't establish the ground game against Indiana, but the Hoosiers were selling out to stop the run, left themselves vulnerable in the air. Trace McSorley threw for 315 yards and two touchdowns. It's interesting, though, how Pitt can outgain Penn State and Indiana can get 352 yards of offense and 19 first downs, and still Penn State blew both teams out. I don't know what that means. I just think it's interesting. Penn State's been opportunistic on defense, and outside of the empty red zone trips at Iowa, Penn State has done a good job of sealing the deal more often than not when they've had opportunities to put points on the board. Sneaky tough game this week for Penn State traveling to Northwestern. But either way, I got the Nittany Lions at number one. So there you go. Got a change at number five, but the four other teams remain the same. Penn State 1, Ohio State 2, Wisconsin 3, Michigan 4, Michigan State 5. It's really going to be a revealing week in a lot of different ways. I think we're going to find out a lot about Michigan State and Wisconsin, in my opinion. I know Wisconsin's a top 10 team, but you look at who they've played, they really haven't played anybody. I mean, Utah State, yeah. BYU, yeah. FAU, yeah. Northwestern's just okay. They got the doors blown off them at Duke. And then Michigan State's a tough team to get a handle on as well. And that'll be quite the revealing situation for them heading to Ann Arbor, especially with Michigan come off a bye. You know, and while Nebraska isn't a great team, Wisconsin having to go to Memorial Stadium at night under the lights with basically Nebraska's season and head coach's future on the line, it's going to be a tough game for the Badgers. But we're going to find out. It's going to be a revealing week to me for a lot of teams in the Big Ten. For Michigan State, for Wisconsin. I even think that Minnesota-Purdue game's fascinating. You know, it's tough to get a feel for it. Minnesota was undefeated, and then Maryland goes to Minnesota with their third-string quarterback and beats them. Purdue got off to a hot start. Figure out what they look like against a team that's going to be, you know, a little angry coming off a loss. And then, you know, Maryland's going to get blown out at Ohio State, probably. That's probably what's going to happen. You know, by the way, real quick, before we go to break, you know, we've been, you know, you talk about, oh, Butch Jones is going to lose his job at Tennessee, and Kevin Sumlin's going to lose his job at Texas A&M, and you feel like there's going to be a lot of good jobs open at the end of the year. And you start thinking about head coaching candidates that could be viable dudes to pursue to maybe go get a job. Chip Kelly's kind of the first name you throw out. The other name that's been thrown out a lot is Bob Stoops, and Bob Stoops reiterated to News A-OK that he is staying retired. He said, quote, "I will say, regardless of what you might hear out there in the papers, if I intended again to coach, that would have been part of my statement. I would have said, I'm stepping away here now for this time for myself, but when it comes to the next year or two, I will look forward to getting back in it. But that's not what I said. You won't see me on a college sideline or a pro sideline. A lot of people act like they know, and there will be more than a few jobs out there, but that isn't at all what I'm looking to do." So Bob Stoops, you know, that's all Bob Stoops. He's out there. Chip Kelly's out there. Yeah, you know, I think Chip Kelly clearly wants to get back in coaching. Bob Stoops is kind of telling you, hey, man, you know, contrary to what you hear, contrary to bozos like me saying, hey, Bob Stoops, what about Bob Stoops? He reiterated, it ain't going to happen. It is not going to happen. And I will say this, you know, thinking, you know, because obviously, you know, Frost is another guy that I think is going to be I think he's going to be one of the five most attractive candidates, assuming Central Florida kind of doesn't fall apart. There is a little bit of irony, and maybe I don't know if irony is the right word, but there is a little bit of irony to me that Nebraska is honoring the 97 team, which was led by Scott Frost, on what I consider to be Judgment Day for Riley. Like, there's a little bit of irony in that. It's like, hey, check it out, 97 team, yeah, led by Scott Frost, baby. And now here comes a game in which will probably determine the future of Mike Riley's tenure at Nebraska. A little bit of irony in there. I think that was in the alternate version of Alanis Morissette, Ironic. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I'm pretty sure Alanis Morissette in the remix said it was a little ironic to honor the 97 team on the night of Judgment Day, with Scott Frost being rumored as the guy. Let's take a break. I love this song. Who doesn't love this song? By the way, everything in this is, it's not ironic, it's unfortunate. But the song's so good. You know a song's good when it is like, it doesn't make sense, but you still like it because it sounds so good. A black fly in your Chardonnay is not ironic. It's unfortunate. It's a death row pardon 10 minutes early. That's awful. No, isn't it unfortunate? I think that's where there was... Well, rain on your wedding day is supposed to be good luck, right? That's what they tell me.
But let's be real. That drop is incredible.
That's great. I mean, the song's fantastic. I mean, it's 10,000 spoons and all you need in a night. Like, that's awful. Just to play it safe. He was afraid to fly. He packed his suitcase, guys. Kissed his kids goodbye.
Thank you for listening to today's Best of Game Time podcast. Hear Nick's entire past show on 1620thezone.com's Game Time podcast page and live 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. weekdays on 1620 The Zone, the 1620 The Zone app, and 1620thezone.com.